You're listening to the EWN Podcast Network.
Welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl, a community and education platform that empowers parents and caretakers to foster independence, leadership, and strong personal identity in girls so they can change the world. Now, here is the founder and your host, Maria Fuller.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl. I'm the founder and your host, Maria Fuller. Before we get started, let's make sure you know where to find me. You can find more information about our education and community platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com, and you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Raising a Powerful Girl. Make sure to connect with us on social media to find out our latest news, learn tips and tricks, submit your questions, and continue our enlightening conversations. And now, let's get on with today's show. We are inundated with negative messages about our bodies. Diet culture has brainwashed us into thinking that our bodies aren't thin enough, firm enough, or fill in the blank enough. The message of positive body image is key to implementing confidence and self-esteem for our daughters. My guest today is Marla Mervis Hartman. Marla is passionate about this message, changing the lives of women by promoting health and self-worth built on character. Women are powerful beings. When we focus on the good we can share with the world rather than the size of our butts, we can positively impact the world. Marla is the creator of Love Your Body, Love Yourself. After years of struggling with her own dysfunctional body relationship, Marla has transformed her experiences into services to help women discover, honor, and appreciate their bodies. As a professional, Marla has been featured at TEDx Salinas. She was a leading body image expert at Journey Malibu, a drug and alcohol rehabilitation center. She lives in Los Angeles with her husband and son, where she works full-time as a professional coach, speaker, facilitator, and Living Light Reiki master and teacher. You can find her at www.loveyourbodyloveyourself.com.
Well, welcome, Marla. It's so good to have you here today, and I'm very excited about our conversation. You're a TEDx speaker, and I will share with our listeners at the end where they can hear that presentation. It's a very powerful presentation. And so I would love to start with you kind of telling us a little bit about your history and your journey on becoming a woman that is supporting positive body image for women and girls all around.
Yes, well, I feel so passionate about sharing this message because my journey actually started as a young girl about not liking myself, about a lot of, it all started. I mean, we realize that, most people realize that the issues that we have start very young. And this was my issue. I did not like my body. I was constantly concerned about what I looked like. I struggled with the food that I ate, wanting it to be perfect. And from this, I had a lot of emotional eating around this. And I mean, I did everything. I underate, I overate, I binged, I overexercised, I obsessed about my body. I was comparing myself to other people all the time. And this is the thing about this issue is that I was pretty confident all my whole life. And yet I still had these running tapes that I wasn't good enough. And then I didn't look the right way. And I guess what I'll do is kind of share with you like how this really started, what I believe from that young age that got imprinted on me. And it's an interesting story because it really took me a while to kind of figure it out for myself, like where this all started. But I was a very curvy little girl. I had, I developed first, but even as a very young girl, I was very curvy. And I had a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a lot of parents, a lot of adults saying probably inappropriate things, but even if they weren't being inappropriate, they were commenting about my body. They were saying things like, I'd love to look like her when I grow up. Oh, look at your little foxy body. You're going to look amazing when you're older. You know, all these little things. And I recently talked about it with my mom. And she said, yeah, Marla, it was challenging when people would talk about your body that way. And you were a, I don't know how she said it, but it was like, you were a sexy little one, right? Yeah. And so I had this imprint on my body, on myself, that my body mattered. People commented about my body. I got attention about on because of my body. And so my identity was my body. And so it seemed like it brought me happiness because I was getting attention, even though I was uncomfortable with it. And if it moved or changed, did that mean that I wasn't loved? Did that mean that I wasn't okay? And I really didn't get that full force from my family. They've always completely loved me and cared for me. And it was never based in my looks. But it was this overemphasis on my body. And even as a young girl who I said developed earlier, there was a lot of discomfort in that because I was kind of the first out of my girlfriends. So once again, I had all these changes happening and I felt really uncomfortable. And so it got really, really messed up in my head. And then I had a very big appetite. I always have. And then food became a place of retreat for me, a place where I could escape, a place where I could let go of the feelings of any sort of discomfort at that point, right? Anything that's uncomfortable, I would kind of take to obsessing about my body or obsessing about my food.
Wow. Your story resonates a lot with me in so many ways. And I'm someone that has struggled for many years with body image and self-esteem. And, you know, as I go through this journey with other mothers and with my own daughter, you know, I'm starting to do the work that I need to do to kind of move past it. But a lot of what you spoke of was my same exact history. And so I'm partially Latina, even though I'm very white presenting. And so I was the girl at 12 and 13 that had, you know, had developed a large chest. I had, you know, the classic Latina hips, you know, that really curvy hourglass figure. And I got a lot of attention from men, and it was inappropriate a lot of times, and from much older men. And there was always a huge emphasis on my body. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, I went to parochial Catholic school. So there was a huge emphasis on body there. And there was a lot of body shaming for girls there. You know, the clothing that I wore, your skirt is too short, where in fact it actually wasn't short. They would measure with a ruler. It was just the way my clothes fit on my body that I was thought to be dressing, you know, provocatively, where I wasn't. And so there was this constant fixation on, you know, the sexualization of my body and the attention. And there was a lot of positive attention and negative attention. Although for me, it was always negative because I didn't want the attention. And my oldest daughter has much, you know, I can't really tell with my 3-year-old yet, but my oldest daughter has my body type.
Yeah.
And at 3 or 4, people would call her sexy. And I was like, she's
no
4.
Yeah.
You know,
no.
But she has that curvy figure already, you know, and we try not to talk about bodies at home in that sense.
Yes.
Of physical attributes. We talk of our bodies about being strong and what it allows us to do and taking care of our bodies, whether it's putting lotion on after a, you know, a bath so that our skin stays, you know, moist, or, you know, walking and keeping our bodies strong and healthy that way. And much of, you know, like many moms out there, I'm very concerned about navigating this with my own daughter so that she doesn't have the same experience that I had. What are some things that you could say to moms are really important, if similar to both of our experiences, they're experiencing as well with their own girls?
Well, I would say to that, that just what you said of just like having the baseline be around taking care of your body. But even more importantly is having a conversation, like saying, how does that make you feel when people are saying that about your body? Does that, you know, like going into it a little bit more, not pretending like it's not happening and not just skirting over it, but like really candling it full on, you know, because we can't control what other people do and what they say to our children all the time. And our children will have comments said to them. But if we are aware of our own journey with it, and then we're just like, how does that make you feel? And then going into that deeper and having a deeper conversation and letting those feelings of discomfort have a place to land, have a place to talk about our bodies that's safe. I think that is so key to this, so instrumental.
I love that because it's acknowledging that I see that this is going on, because I yes. think what happens for a lot of girls, especially when they're younger and they're experiencing something like that, some of them don't even understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. Some of them don't realize it, or some of them think, you know, maybe this is appropriate. Maybe this is the way things are supposed to be.
Totally.
Because of what media is saying, and, or that they're crazy for feeling this way. And to be able to say with your daughter, I noticed that that person said something about you. How does that make you feel? Let's talk about it. If you don't like it, let's come up with something that you can do or say to make it stop, or to come and get me if someone says a comment like that that you don't like, and I'll help you address it so that they don't feel alone or trapped and they're able to process that. Because I think that was part of my issues. I've never been able to process that. And so my worth has been on my body. So when my body changed for whatever reason, like you, I switched to food for comfort. And a lot of that comes from, you know, my upbringings and stuff as well.
Yes.
When my body changed and I no longer got that attention, my self-worth plummeted.
Yes. And this is the thing, that society is making such a big deal about our bodies, right? And we don't want to ignore that that is the case. And we don't want to ignore that we can just talk about things positively. We really need to address what the negativity, what is happening out in the world and how it's actually wrong. We need to invest in letting our girls know that this diet mentality, this diet culture is not normal. And the biggest piece around that really is for us to acknowledge it for ourselves. That is the biggest piece. And it's such great leverage for mothers to get their shit together around their bodies, right? It's like, if you have anything going on with your body, with how you're feeling about yourself, if you're listening to this and you have issues with body image, this is a great opportunity to look at that, to really like search a little bit deeper and see, how do I feel about my body? What am I actually saying about my body in nonchalant ways that my girls may pick up? Mm-hmm. And that's really big. I had one of my clients, it just opened up my heart. She was telling me that, and she had been struggling for a while, and she said that she looked out the window and she saw her girls running around playing in the yard. And she said, I really need to get this together for myself. I do not want them to think that their bodies aren't good enough. I do not want them to struggle with how I need to find a way to love my body and appreciate it right now. And our children are such great leverage for our own health and our own well-being. And it's a really wonderful time to do that. And she took it even further, and she really made sure that the people around her were speaking kindly about their bodies. She had her mother-in-law who just said, one of her girls said, hey, let's go swimming. And her mother-in-law said, I'm not going swimming. I'm not putting a bathing suit on. Do you see my belly? And this woman was like, no. We do not speak about our bodies that way. It is not conditional whether we have fun on what our bodies look like. So it's things like that, like catching it and noticing the things that we are saying, the way we're looking in the mirror, those comments that we say about our bodies. It's so important.
Yeah, the behavior modeling really is important. Mm-hmm. And the authenticity with yourself on how you feel. And a lot of this, and what you say is, you know, what I have had to forcefully work on, and mm-hmm. it's not easy. You know, we live on a little river in Connecticut, and we recently purchased a boat a year ago. It's my husband's therapy, and, you know, we have a pool, and we like to have friends over, and for me to get into a bathing suit in front of people was work. And for me to do that in a place where I did it in front of my children and there was no emphasis on my body was even harder. Mm-hmm. And I think at first when you do something like that and you're processing your own emotions, you know, the kids see that. They know you're struggling with it. And so I think we went out one day and I was grouching about putting on the bathing suit or doing something. It was just one of those days, you know, where you just don't feel good in your own skin. And my daughter said, "What's wrong, Mama? Why don't you want to be in your bathing suit today?" And I was like, "You know, I'm just not feeling comfortable." At least I chose the word comfortable. "I'm just not feeling comfortable today in this bathing suit. It's kind of bothering me some, you know, but it's okay. We're still going to go out and have fun." And, she, you know, luckily she was young enough that she interpreted it as like, "Yeah, sometimes my bathing suit gives me a wedgie and I don't like it too." And we laughed about it, but I really had to really consciously push all of the negative emotions, work through the negative emotions, so that when I put that bathing suit on, there is no emotional attachment anymore because they will see it.
Yeah. And I love that you were very honest and authentic, because that's what happens. We all have bodies, and sometimes we don't feel comfortable in our body. And sometimes we have those days where we just feel like we just want to wear tons of clothes or hide under the covers, or, you know, those are moments that our children will have. Mm-hmm. And so to be authentic and share with your daughter where you are and how you're feeling about it, I think it's so beautiful. And to say it in that way, "I'm just not feeling comfortable in my body, and we're still going to have fun," right? That is so good. And even if there was more that you needed to share with her, you know, and even for some parents who are really struggling with it, you know, to have the conversation of, "Listen, I know I have issues with you know, I was really grouchy today. Let's just take it a step further. I was really grouchy today, and it was because I'm very uncomfortable with my body. And that's actually, I really want to be more comfortable with my body. And I want you to feel comfortable with your body. And I realize sometimes I may say the wrong things about my body, but I do know that my body is beautiful." Mm-hmm. And even going into the, you know, why you feel that way. Yeah. And being able to share, like, honestly, our children love that. They eat, you know, they eat that up. They feel that so deeply when we're like really sharing our struggles and that authenticity. And that helps them to get in touch with more with their bodies and to understand, "Oh, I'm feeling, what is that? Oh, it's actually, I'm uncomfortable." Mm-hmm. And there's a place to talk about it here.
Yeah, I love that. So I want to dive a little bit deeper. You touched really briefly on diet culture, and mm-hmm. I would love for you to just explain that a little bit more in depth on what that really means and what that looks like.
Yeah. So you could open up any social media feed, you can turn on the TV, and we're constantly being told that we are supposed to eat certain foods that are going to make us healthier, they're going to make us happier. The body that we're in is not thin enough. It is not strong enough. Our body is not big enough. It's not small enough. Our boobs are not look good. You know, they're not the right size. We are inundated with this all the time, and the confusion around what to eat and what's the new diet. And, oh, then there's the paleo. Then there's the, it goes on and on and on and on. And the truth is that diets do not work. That's why it's like a billion-dollar industry. If it worked, then we wouldn't need the next diet. And so this diet mentality that we are being force-fed, and we're being force-fed the idea that we have to struggle and we have to work hard in order to have the body that we want, and that we have to restrict our food, and we have to exercise really hard, all these things, in order to have a body that is what we want. And let's just break down dieting And everyone, I'm sure, who's listening has been on a diet. Everyone, I think everyone has, right? And the reason it doesn't work is because we're putting our body into deprivation. We are restricting our body from the food. We're depriving our body from food, right? And from that deprivation, I don't care what kind of willpower you have, eventually the body, the primal aspect, the fight or flight, the survival is, I need some food here. We need some food. So in a moment of emotional, or having fun at a party and not being on it and white knuckling it and have it, it's going to flip to the other side. Not only does it flip to their side, but then you end up eating more because the body's in fear that it's not going to have what it needs. And so within that diet cycle, which I lived most of my life, which is the restriction, the deprivation, then the binging, and then what happens after that? There is the shame. There is the discomfort. There is the beating ourselves up. I'll never get it right. It's like we're not meant to get it right. Our bodies are intelligent and they're going to take care of themselves. Like I said, it doesn't matter what kind of willpower you have. So then shame kicks in. It's like, I'm going to do it again. I can do this. So then, now I need to even restrict more because I overate so much. And so it just continues. It's this ongoing loop that really doesn't work. It doesn't. And that loop and that cycle is a challenging place to get off of. It really is. It's not easy. I know it took me a really, really long time. But if you step off of that cycle and move over to the right, there's this whole way of being that we can be with our food, that we can be with our life, that doesn't have restriction. It doesn't have any whips or chains around our food. It may have different choices around our food that may feel like we're restricting, but it's different when it comes from a place of health. It's different when we're deciding to not eat processed food because when we eat something that's alive, it actually feels better, right? That's different. It's different when we want to go to the gym because our deeper why is to have more breath, more vitality in our body so that we can be with our kids, like that deeper why, so we feel have more confidence and self-esteem, not so that we are beating ourselves up and doing all these intense exercises so that we're thin. So that whole thing is just like this, and we're seeing it all the time with the selfies and the beautiful and the this and the that and the comments about bodies and just this saturation, that's the right word, of if we lose weight, we will be happy. Before I weighed this much and it's always this sad face. And then there's this girl who lost weight and she's like, oh no, her life is so much better. And it's just so not true. We still have the shame. We still have the issues that we had. And the women that I work with, the ones who have lost the weight are often telling me, if they haven't done the emotional work underneath, are often telling me, I'm just afraid that I'm going to gain it back now. Mm-hmm. So it's not about the losing it. Now they're in deep fear that they're going to gain it back. And so they're still in prison of the food. And I know that was a big part of it for me. It was just easier just to be eating it and obsessing over it than the fear of gaining it back. And most times we do. Most times, and if you look at the statistics of dieting, people not only gain the weight back, they gain it back and some. Yeah. When they're approaching their health in that way.
Yeah.
So there's a very long-winded way of sharing.
But it's a good way of describing really what it is we're talking about. And for myself, the statistics are showing that by 10 years of age, most girls have thought about being on a diet. And my almost 9-year-old came home a year ago and said, are you on a diet? To me. And I said, well, what does that mean to you? Like, what does that word mean? She's like, I don't know. They were talking about a diet, like that mommies are on diets. And I said, well, to me, the word diet means the food that we eat. So humans, our diet consists of, you know, meats and fish and vegetables and stuff. And let's look at our dogs. What does their diet consist of? Their diet consists of, you know, we actually give them chicken and their kibble and their water and their treats. And let's look at fish. And what is a fish's diet? So I try to just switch the word in her mind of what diet really means. Cause originally that's where the word diet came from, is, you know, an explanation of the food someone eats, to try to pull away that negative connotation. And then we talked a little bit about, you know, why we eat what we eat at home, and the things that we don't eat and why we don't eat them and how it makes us feel. And, you know, when you have three pieces of candy and then you're bouncing off the walls, and afterwards when you're like, ugh, like, that's why mommy and daddy don't like you guys having a lot of candy a lot of times, right? And, you know, the emotional intelligence over food and understanding how food makes you feel with girls, I think, is really important in helping them to learn to eat without having that emotional component, right? So not having the food attached to the emotion, but eating foods because they make you feel alive and strong, is really important.
Yes.
A lot of parents these days use food as behavior reward. And I have my views on it, is that that's a really big problem, that we should never use food to reward behavior or to punish behavior. Like, if you don't behave, there's no dessert tonight, or, you know, you did so good in school, we're going to go get you an ice cream sundae. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. I remember one of a low point for me in seventh grade. You remember seventh grade? I wouldn't care if someone gave me $1 million. and I just remember a bunch of my dearest friends who were so mean to me, and they were so, it was just an awful moment in time that I feel like I'm still processing. And I remember my mom saying, let's go get some ice cream. And it worked. I felt so much better. It took my anxiety. And I just remember, like, her even saying that. I had that sense memory of getting in the car, you know, on the way there, or maybe it was on the way back, and feeling better that I had this ice cream. And in one way, okay, it worked, right? Food actually does work to make us feel better. There is an emotional component to that. And we don't want to say that that is wrong completely, because we don't want to, for it to be wrong means that we're taking away the very gift that food has, that has to give us a round of our emotions. But I will say that that moment, ice cream became it for me. I mean, it was my go-to. Anytime I had anything that was uncomfortable, ice cream, ice cream, ice cream. That's, now I was susceptible to that, and I was very vulnerable to that, right? So I realized that that was feeding into what was already being set up for me. However, if my mom, and God love her, she was a great role model for positive body image, by the way. She would have taken me out on the back porch and held me and rocked me and loved me and talked to me more and shared with me more and stroked my head or did something like that, it would have been different. I do think something in my psyche would have been different. And so I agree with you. I agree with you on that. And that's a tricky one, because it does work. Well, it's a tricky one for parents.
It is. And I think, you know, what I've seen and what I've learned, and I don't know if this is the truth, but for me, what I've learned is my truth, is that the more work I've done with myself to learn self-care and learn self-care skills,
yes,
the less I've been inclined to turn to food, because I have other mechanisms to mm-hmm. soothe. But my mother didn't have those self-care skills and methods to model to me. So how was it modeled? By food, because that's what we know. That's what we know in the Latin culture, right? So to me, if your mom had the technique that with herself when she's having a horrible day, that's sitting with you and talking with you and then maybe drawing you a bubble bath and lighting some candles for you and holding some space for you and telling you sit in here and relax, or teaching you to journal, or teaching you to meditate, or going and doing yoga together, and that was what she did and that's what she taught you, then maybe, you know, that ice cream situation wouldn't have happened. And that's what I'm always telling people, is find another way without using the food to teach the self-soothing mechanisms and skills, to reward the behavior, so that there's not always this attachment to a thing or something, but it's something you're doing for yourself.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more. I feel like most of my clients have told me at one point in another that they have had to learn how to take care of themselves, that they've had to learn self-love, self-care actions, because in their family, in their household, taking care of themselves and their own emotional needs was always last on the list. It was always what was happening in the household that mattered more than their needs, right? So, and that's a whole generational thing, I think, as well. I hope, but it feels to me that we are understanding that. There's more of a self-care revolution going on. And I think that that will imprint on our children and really be supportive. And I couldn't agree with you more. And I think what is a wonderful way to do that, if food is already your go-to, is in the moments where the emotions aren't really, really high, you could start implementing other ways of self-care. So if it's just a triggering day, but not like one that takes you out and makes you feel like you're run over by a truck, right? It's like sometimes those moments, you're so in it, you just go to food, right? But let's take those other moments where you're more aware of what's going on. It's like, okay, in this moment, I could actually consciously make another choice that would be really important to do, right? So though, that's ways to bring in more of that self-care. And I think you're right, as far as not being modeled that.
Thank you so much, Marla. I love this conversation, and it's brought me a lot of clarity on my own journey. We've touched on some really powerful topics, and I know our listeners have learned so much. To find out more about Marla, you can find her at www.loveyourbodyloveyourself.com. To hear the rest of this interview as we further explore this topic, please join our community at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. We look forward to seeing you there.
You are a leader and a role model to developing girls. Whether you're raising a daughter or you work with girls on a daily basis, you see the incredible potential they have to make a difference in this world. You know the change we need is going to come from them, and you want to make sure they grow up to be independent leaders with a strong sense of personal identity, because these are the traits that make a powerful girl. So come join our community and education platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. And become a part of our movement to educate, inspire, and cultivate a generation of powerful girls with eye-opening discussions and facts, exercises, and tangible calls to action. We can't wait to see you there.
Have you ever asked yourself this question? Why is it so hard to make a buck? I know I have. Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. What I have discovered after going from the brink of bankruptcy to running a multi-million dollar award-winning business is this. You can't build a million-dollar dream hanging around minimum wage mindsets. My mission is 1 million women entrepreneurs generating $1 million in annual revenue. So here's what I've done. I've created the mother of all entrepreneur success programs that you can access online on your time. It's called Monetize Me Now. It's a 7-module online course that is 100% my success formula, covering mindset, mission, management, motivation, marketing, and measure. Come on, take my hand and I'll show you the way to learn to earn flowing revenue for your business. Visit monetizemenow.com for details. Thanks for joining us. This is the EWN Podcast Network.